Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. Are we finally on the brink of a general election being called? Jo Swinson, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, said she's done a deal with the SNP, where they are tomorrow going to have a vote in Parliament, a vote that's quite likely to get the Conservatives' support. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss. Katie, there's going to be a government vote today. We're expecting them to lose that vote. Oh, that's on the Fixed-Term Parliament Act. In other words, Labour, if Labour vote against it, the motion falls.
Yes, between now and the vote this evening, Boris Johnson is going to lose that unless Labour suddenly change their position drastically and say they're going to support Boris Johnson. What Boris Johnson is doing is calling for an election December 12 under the Fixed-Term Parliament Act. That means he needs two-thirds of MPs to back it. And at the moment, he does not have the numbers. He doesn't have the votes. So you could draw from that that an election before Christmas looks unlikely. But the reason that there's still a good chance of one, even if Boris Johnson loses the vote this evening, is that there is another plan being put forward by opposition MPs, notably Jo Swinson, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and Ian Blackford from the SNP, which is to push for a general election on the 9th of December, 3 days earlier than Boris Johnson's preferred date. Now, they plan to put forward a bill, and this would require a simple majority because it would override the Fixed-Term Parliament Act. Now, at the weekend when this was first announced, you had various cabinet ministers on the Sunday shows suggesting this was a gimmick and a stunt and implying that the government wouldn't necessarily back or take it particularly seriously. It now appears that the view in number 10 is that their plan A would be the Fixed-Term Parliament Act today. But if that doesn't work, then they will start to look at this and there might be some agreement you can come to. I think the notable thing, regardless of the ins and outs of, you know, whose plan is going to work or whose bill it is tomorrow, is that you have a situation where both the Liberal Democrats and the SNP have come to the view that an election before Christmas is in their interests. You have the EU today granting an extension up until January. And I think the fact that you have opposition parties who now see an election before Christmas as beneficial to them, and you have the Tories who also want an election before Christmas, does change the dynamic and increase the chance considerably that we will have a December election.
Now, James, if we imagine Brexit will be done by the end of January, effectively we're looking at the question of a pre-Brexit election. Now, if the Lib Dems, the SNP and the Tories are all united in thinking that it's within their interests to have a pre-Brexit election, that does suggest that tomorrow's vote will go through, or are there other complicating factors?
The complicating factor is what happens with this bill in terms of amendments. Well, the implication from Jo Swinson has been that the bill would pass clean.
Is that because if there were any amendments, the Tories wouldn't back it?
Yeah, I mean, for example, if you were to enfranchise EU nationals, that would obviously not exactly be helpful to the Tories' electoral prospects. The other question is, what does the House of Lords say about this when it gets down to that end of a corridor? Now, in normal times, you would say that the House of Lords, the unelected House, wouldn't interfere in the question of when an election should be called, but these aren't normal times. But I think, in a way, your question actually hit upon what's going on right now. Because if you are an outright stop Brexit party, in the way that Lib Dems and the SNP are, it's clear that you don't have the numbers in this current parliament to stop Brexit, so you need an election. And that's also why some Tories think this is such a risk, that you could lose Brexit in the election. Equally, the Tories think that the electoral sweet spot for them is to be able to go into those Labour seats in Wales, the West Midlands and the North East and say, if you want to get Brexit done, you've got to vote for us, while at the same time being able to reassure voters in the seats that Lib Dems are targeting of theirs, that there's going to be a deal. So I think in a way, what is quite clear is the one party who it is very hard to see how a pre-Brexit election is in the interest of, is the Labour Party. And that is why they are the ones holding out against it.
So, Katie, if it's looking likely that an election motion would pass tomorrow, then might the Labour Party be thinking, look, guys, we're going to have to be forced to do a general election one way or another, rather than have it look as if we're being dragged to it, why don't we just back today's motion, the Monday motion, so we can at least take the initiative? Because it's either that or be forced into an election tomorrow, and that's going to mean fewer votes.
Well, there are some in government who hope that that might have this effect on Labour, so there is still a chance that today's effort does pass. I think the message really is there is going to be an election, so how do you want to go into there? If you are a Labour MP, particularly one representing a Leave seat, do you want to go into an election when Brexit hasn't been delivered? Or do you want to go into an election where a Brexit deal has passed? And if you want the Brexit deal to have passed, then if you back the government's motion today, there is time for the WAB, the withdrawal agreement bill, to be returned to the House. I think the general line, though, coming from Labour, which means that I think it is tricky to see that working at the moment, but the situation is fluid, is the fact that Labour are effectively saying, unless no deal is taken off the table completely, we can't back an election. And they want Boris Johnson to say that, you know, he will never countenance a no-deal Brexit. They have suggested, or figures have within Labour, that they're not even satisfied with what has been agreed today, which is this idea of an extension to the end of January. This being because if you had potentially a Labour government come into power after a 12th of December election, they wouldn't actually have that much time to pass the Brexit deal or arrange a second referendum, and therefore no deal is still a risk. So I think that if they are going to push that line, which is slightly tenuous depending how you look at it, it's hard to see how you suddenly get behind Boris Johnson's plan for a general election. And also, Labour is currently trying to appeal to both sides in the sense that its policy is officially a second referendum, and they will choose how to campaign in that nearer the time. So I can't see the front bench saying, oh, let's try and pass the Brexit deal.
And James, meanwhile, the so-called People's Vote campaign has been having a bit of a meltdown.
Yes, there has been kind of long-running tensions in this campaign between various factions, and those have now burst out into the open in kind of full technicolor. Roland Rudd, the multimillionaire businessman who's been one of the big funders of the campaign, has said, right, the sacking Tom Baldwin, who used to work for Ed Miliband, and James McGorry, who used to work for Nick Clegg, so kind of large Labour and Lib Dem figures in the campaign, respectively.
Why does he want them sacked?
Because, I mean, there are two differences. One is Roland Rudd wants the campaign to be much more explicitly a Remain campaign. Mm-hmm. While some people think that it would be better to argue for a second referendum on the grounds of public no more now, rather than just in a kind of we want to stay in way. And the second thing is an argument about who should front it, whether it should be politicians or non-politicians. Now, one can obviously see the argument in this anti-politics moment, putting a non-politician in charge. The problem with putting a non-politician in charge is they tend to make mistakes because they're not used to playing the political game. I mean, I think you remember Stuart Rose. David Cameron had this idea that he would use Stuart Rose, the Marks and Spencer's boss, to front the Stay In campaign back in 2016. And then Stuart Rose went and said, well, one of the problems with Brexit is it would lead to a rise in wages because there would be lower immigration. And most voters heard that and thought, that's the one of the problems with it. And that is, I think, one of the issues in trying
to... Which, by the way, has turned out to be true. I mean, there are some construction workers' figures the other day showing incredible increases in worker salaries, but the industry itself was complaining because it's harder to get workers. I guess that's exactly what people voted for, even to businessmen like Stuart Rose. It sounded like a bad idea.
Yeah. And so I think that tension is that. I think there's also another issue, which is this, again, relating to this question of an election, which is some people on the second referendum side think you need to have an election to get there, but there aren't the numbers in this parliament for an election. Other people want to keep going. They think the longer this parliament goes on, the more the second referendum becomes the only thing that can break the deadlock. That's one of the other tensions, I think.
And we've also seen some white smoke from the Elysee, Katie, in that Macron has finally agreed to go along with the EU and give the flex extension until the end of January. Now, this means, doesn't it, that we can basically leave at any point up until the end of January. In fact, it seems like a reasonably decent offer from the EU.
Yes, but from the government's perspective, they need pressure to pass a Brexit deal. And therefore, having a flextension, as I think Tusk tweet suggested earlier today, where, yes, you can leave early, but it can just drag on until the end of January, doesn't provide that focusing of minds that they think is needed to get them the Brexit deal to the next stage and to an eventual third reading. So I think that it decreases the chance of a Brexit deal passing from ministers' views. Also, ultimately, it now paves the way to a general election because there had been some hope in government that Macron might win and you would get a short technical, say, 2-week extension. And under that, people would have to look at the deal again. The fact that you have a 3-month extension, I think, does suggest that we are heading towards a general election most likely. And also, it's difficult, again, to see how you have a general election past Christmas under this 3-month extension without having to request another one. So there was some talk that ultimately figures in Number 10 were hoping the fact that after Boris Johnson called for a general election, all the opposition parties appeared to say they didn't want it, that this could help them get a two-week extension. But Jo Swinson and the SNP coming out on Sunday and saying they are open to a general election, I think, did change the dynamic.
Now, James, quite often on this podcast, we can be moaning at the EU, but they seem to have behaved quite honourably here. I mean, they could have said, OK, there's no flex extension, you're being kept into January 31st, or even later than that, right, where the British government is not in a position to argue right now of no majority in Parliament. But it seems to me anyway as if this flextension, where we can leave at a time of our choosing when we get our domestic politics sorted out, is a decent offer. And also, I don't know, I mean, perhaps I'm wrong to see this, but I was rather, I saw a note of optimism that our future relations with the EU might now start to improve.
I think the EU have been loath to look like they are interfering in UK politics. That is why the Macron idea of just giving the UK 2 weeks and saying, right, ratify this deal or else, didn't appeal. He was out on a limb in his willingness to essentially tell Parliament to get on with it. I think in a weird way, obviously the second round of negotiations with the EU will be more difficult because the trade deal is more complicated than the divorce settlement. But there is one way in which I think it will be easier, which is once the UK is legally left, I think this will become much less emotional on the EU side. You know, I think Donald Tusk is still deeply hurt about Brexit. And I think that has made things more difficult because I think for a lot of people on the EU side have continued to entertain hopes that this decision might be reversed. And that has made the negotiation more difficult. I think it's worth also just noting what a blinder Emmanuel Macron has played here,
right,
which is he and Boris Johnson have now forged this very close bond over Macron's attempt to be helpful. Macron hasn't actually vetoed an extension. He hasn't actually expended that much political capital in Europe. But him and Boris Johnson are now closer than they were before. And he is. You've now got a situation where, you know, you've got Boris Johnson reciting O come Emmanuel in political cabinet, in the same way, a great tribute to the French leader. And there is a feeling that he has done what he could to try and help get this deal over the line. Which, you know, in terms of Macron's strategy, of he both wants Brexit to happen and he wants to secure the Anglo-French security relationship after Brexit, he has handled that exceptionally well.
Katie and James, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we're doing a Coffee House Live, so if you'd like to join us, then O come to the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster, where we're going to be on Tuesday the 12th of November discussing Brexit, who knows, by then perhaps a general election campaign. So you can get tickets by going to spectator.co.uk/Brexit event. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Gus Carter, who produced the podcast. Rejoice, rejoice.